Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Tuesday morning. It's August 17th, 57 degrees currently in Old Town Park City, 57 degrees also in Heber City. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cesar Cornejo. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. We continue to expect to see a cooler start, but again, we have smoke hanging around us. And as we continue throughout the day, we're expecting to see that we have a storm system making its way in from the northwest. And that's going to bring us the possibility of some thunderstorms for ourselves. And we do have a marginal risk for severe weather. So a level 1 out of 5, we can expect to see strong to severe winds and some hail likely. We'll see that we do have a high of 86 thanks to that southerly and southwesterly flow that continues to build in throughout the day, which will help lessen some of the smoke. Showers continue into tonight, where we can expect to see a low of 56. Wednesday, we do it all over again. We continue to see some more rain and thunderstorms happening. We could expect to see some of these on the strong side. And again, we'll see a high of 67 after that cold front has moved through and continues to cool us down. We'll see that thunderstorms and showers continue for us on Wednesday night, going throughout the evening and overnight hours as we have that low pressure system starting to wrap around and creating some more rain for us in parts of the Beehive State and in the Wasatch Back. We can expect to see, again, a low of 47. Thursday, we continue with more rain once again and even cooler temperatures. We'll see a high of 61. Showers still remain likely, and we can expect to see some thunderstorms also. As we continue going throughout Thursday, we'll see that showers will continue throughout the evening time frame as we see that the low pressure system continues to move on out towards the east and will stay mostly cloudy with a low of 46. Friday, we expect to see a mostly sunny sky. Some residual moisture still hangs around, so we could see a few showers lingering more or less towards the higher elevation, but we'll see a high of 67. Going into Friday, we're expecting to see mostly clear skies, a low of 49. Saturday, we do have another little system making its way in, quickly clipping us, but we expect to see mostly sunny skies and a high of 70 with a chance of showers. That continues into Saturday night, where we expect to see partly cloudy skies and a low of 50. Sunday, we expect to dry out a bit more, mostly sunny skies. Once again, we start to warm up with a high of 73. Going to Sunday night, we can expect to see mostly clear skies as we dry out some more with a low of 54. Going to Monday, we're expecting to see plenty of sunshine and a high of 76 as we continue to see our warming trend. From the ABC Forecast Center, I'm meteorologist Cesar Cornejo. Over to you, Leslie.
Thanks, Cesar. And stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Deputy Summit County Manager Janet Young, taking a look at the agenda for tomorrow's county council meeting. Parley's Fire Public Information Officer Jesse Bender, or her replacement, will have an update for us on that fire. And finally, Recycle Utah Director Carolyn Wara with a monthly update. Well, the Summit County Council meeting Wednesday, starting in a work session at 1 o'clock. On the phone with a preview, I have Deputy County Manager Janet Young. Good morning, Janet.
Good morning, Leslie.
First, the county yesterday declared a local emergency due to the Parley's Canyon fire. Can you tell us what that means?
So that was essentially so we could extend the evacuation order. We were getting information from those on the ground that there's potentially high winds and bad weather today and tomorrow. So they were not comfortable allowing people to go back to their homes just yet. And so the sheriff's declaration initially, I think, can only hold for 36 hours or something like that. And then it becomes the county manager's responsibility to actually declare an emergency and extend that. So that's why that occurred yesterday.
Okay. Does that mean that we get any additional funding or anything?
Yeah, I'm not as familiar with those nuances. I do know that the FMAG, which is the federal process, is involved in this fire. They are on scene and they are reimbursing costs from what I understand. But I imagine our declaration only helps that. But I'm not as well versed in those nuances.
All right. County Council tomorrow will be getting a PowerPoint from the Utah Film Commission noting that their film incentive program of tax credits and rebates was approved by the legislature in 2011. Starting in 2016, the state had 4 years of growth in film production. Then in 2019, we started to lose film production, and the Film Commission estimates that last year Utah saw $500 million in lost opportunities. So what happened?
I am not familiar with what the state legislature has done on this issue. I can tell you that the council is very interested in these incentive programs, as we've benefited directly from them. As you know, the series Yellowstone was being filmed locally and brought in a lot of pretty significant local sales tax revenues and services, from food to fuel to local employment to that area of the county. We have heard that they left because they either didn't get the incentive or it was reduced. So we're interested to hear from the Utah Film Commission about the status of those programs and how they may benefit the county. Specifically, I do know that there are provisions in those incentives about hiring local cast and crew, as well as utilizing rural Utah for, I think, even the photography that they do. So certainly an interest there among the county.
And actually, I mean, what I understood was that Yellowstone basically got kicked out, that film studio had a better offer from the Tony Hsieh group.
Huh? Oh, that certainly could be it. Again, I'm not as familiar with those details.
Yeah. So what should Summit County do about this, if anything?
Well, I think it's, you know, staying interested. I know Roger Armstrong specifically is really involved in the issue and has been speaking with the state legislature. I think it's a matter of just emphasizing to those decision makers how much we do benefit from those film productions locally, because they do utilize our local services and our local businesses and our local employment. So I think, again, just as much as we can get data on that on those benefits and share it with the legislature and encourage them to keep these incentives, that's probably the best thing we could do.
Okay. Yeah, I know that the presentation estimated that the Yellowstone production brought some $88 million to Summit County. So any
right.
chance that could return to the film studio?
I have no idea.
All
I'm
right.
as interested as you are.
The American Rescue Plan, the staff reports that within the bill, there is $350 billion in the Coronavirus State and Local Recovery Fund, about $1.3 billion for the state of Utah, Summit County getting an amount approaching $8.2 million, and about $1.63 million of that is for cities within the county. You're asking the council to discuss what the four or five priorities are for using this money, and some of those priorities mentioned in the staff report include housing access, water quality and quantity. We have heard about those priorities before. Another is facilitating employment. So are there barriers to getting a job in Summit County, and if so, what are they?
Well, I think this issue really comes to what we've seen in the labor market since the pandemic has occurred, and just individuals choosing to leave the labor market or experiencing hardship around housing or transportation or things like that that prevent them from reentering or entering the workforce. And so that's just been an issue of interest among the county. And is one of the eligible expenditures for this money. So that's potentially an area we're asking the council to consider as one of the focus for our expenditure plan. And just to take a step back, I mean, the reason why we're having this discussion is, you know, we've been encouraged by the National Association of Counties and the feds and the state to really keep our powder dry on this money as long as possible, because we know there will be other opportunities coming down the pike where we could potentially leverage more dollars for our community. For example, we know of several grant opportunities the state will be putting forth pretty soon. And so the purpose of the discussion with the council tomorrow is to try to get some priorities or focus areas identified so that we can direct our resources quickly and appropriately. For example, we don't want our ARPA grant manager devoting time and energy on a project for a grant application only to have the council decide they rather focus on something else. Additionally, when these opportunities become available, we need to react quickly.
Yeah.
And so we're essentially trying to get permission from the council to do that. And we have identified these focus areas you just mentioned, based both on what is eligible under ARPA and where the council's current strategic priorities are.
Okay, so I guess just in terms of facilitating employment, what is it that the county would do? Hold job fairs?
No, there's things like, you know, do we want to set up a child care facility, which we know is a barrier for people who are working? Are there issues with transportation to make that more affordable and easy and accessible to people to get them to employment sectors? Obviously, housing is a big problem that we've identified too during the pandemic that has been a barrier. So it would be projects like those.
Yeah, so could you use it like a special service grant? I mean, could you say use like PC TOTS, which is a nonprofit organization? I mean, could you financially support them rather than setting up your own child care center?
Sure, yeah, that would be an eligible use. Okay. I do know everyone in that business struggles to find providers, and so it's a big challenge.
Another priority, transportation affordability. And I guess we have a free transit system. What else more should we offer?
Well, I don't know what all those solutions are. I think it would probably be for the county just shoring up that infrastructure. You know, we're building a new transit facility on the US 40 corridor to house our new regional system. So that this money could potentially go to support that, or maybe even some of our active transportation plans and just all the infrastructure around that.
All right. And then another priority is, quote, planning for the next big thing. Is that like another pandemic?
Yeah, potentially. So certainly, I think when we talk about this, we are really referring to shoring up our county budgets and disaster funds, so that we are ready for the next crisis that might come our way.
All right, you're also planning to discuss the council's strategic planning for an hour. This was postponed from last week. Anything here that we should know about?
Yes, so this discussion is, you know, we haven't talked about the county's mission, vision, or values statements in a while. And in the context with the new council member who joined us in January, Melina Stevens is new to the council, as well as understanding that the COVID pandemic has changed everything, we thought this was a really good time to go through this exercise with the council, review our current mission, vision, and value statements, and see if we need to update them or completely rewrite them. And, you know, because these statements really do provide direction for everything that happens in our county government. And we thought it was important to start there with that discussion before we further define and dive into the strategic priorities with the council, which I think we're slated to do next week.
Okay, let's see, a possible adoption of a contract with Bob Zanetti as chief of the Park City Fire District. So this would not be an interim appointment, but permanent?
Yeah, that is what it appears to be. As you know, Park City Fire Chief Paul Hewitt sadly and tragically passed away at the end of July. And so the Park City Fire District's Administrative Control Board has decided to appoint Bob Zanetti, who had been Chief Hewitt's deputy, as the new chief. And so the council's role is to review and consent to that contract, which was negotiated with and by the board. I think we are taking our direction from the board on this and support Chief Zanetti's appointment. He has served the district honorably for the past 30 plus years. And I know the council specifically believes that he provides much needed continuity to both the firefighters and our community during this tough time of loss and transition.
Yeah, certainly. And congratulations to him. 30 years, though, that's kind of like the magic number, though, for somebody of in his position that would start to think about retirement. So, I mean, are we thinking about his replacement at this point?
So the contract is for 5 years, mm-hmm. Which we're happy to see that he is staying on for that time. I'm sure the district is going through succession planning with their board, but I'm not familiar with those details.
All right. Also, a discussion about 20 local businesses writing off their uncollected personal property bills. Does the county do this very often?
You know, I think this is the first time I've seen this item on the council agenda. I don't think it happens very often, but I would leave that to the assessor's office to say for sure. These tend to be situations where it just takes more effort to collect those taxes than they are worth, and then the value of those taxes. So certainly state statute gives the authority to the assessor or the treasurer to write these off. And the process is she just has to come to the county council and ask for that. So That's what she's doing tomorrow.
All right. Let's see. Possible approval for a project, $3.1 million to create softball and multipurpose fields. The applicant is the North Summit Rec District, but they're in partnership with Summit County, Colville, and the North Summit School District. The county will pay for it with $1.1 million in RAP funding. The other $2 million would come from restaurant tax funding. But the restaurant tax is supposed to go for projects that generate visitation. So what's the rationale to finance ball fields in North Summit?
So the idea is there's been a desire among the North Summit community for a while now to be able to host softball tournaments, lacrosse tournaments, soccer tournaments. They just haven't had the ability to do that because they lack a lot of those amenities. Obviously, those tournaments bring in a lot of spectators, players, families who then stay in the area, eat at the local restaurants, generate quite a bit of extra tax revenue. And so that's the nexus to those funds. I should just clarify quickly that this item is on the agenda primarily to see if the council is interested in allocating $2 million from their restaurant tax fund balance. It's not to approve the project per se. We're still in the process of applying for RAP tax bond funds, that $1.1 million, which we're doing in partnership with the North Summit Rec District.
All right, thanks for that clarification. Also, possible approval of a ballot proposition for November for up to $50 million for an open space bond. The resolution added some purposes besides just open space. Those include active open space and constructing recreational amenities, also conservation easements, as well as environmental and wildlife mitigation measures. So what are we talking there? Wildlife fencing or?
Yeah, I think the purpose of this, just for everyone to understand, is, you know, we want as much flexibility to consider this potential tool to fund recreational amenities within the county, particularly on the eastern side of the county. So there's still a lot of detail that needs to be provided to this effort should the county decide to go forward with a general obligation bond. The purpose tomorrow is to at least see if the council wants to notify the lieutenant governor of our possible intent of going forward with the bond so that we have as much flexibility to continue discussing it. So really when it comes down to details around what it will fund, specific parcels, the basic infrastructure, or the specific infrastructure, none of that is really decided yet. Again, I think we're just identifying that there's a need and an interest in funding these acquisitions and this infrastructure, and we want to continue discussing it with the community. And if the council passes this parameters resolution tomorrow, it allows us time to continue that process, continue testing the waters. We can always revoke it if we decide we don't want to put it on the ballot, but we do have to meet a deadline, I think, of August 19th to give that notification.
Yeah, that's right. All right. And then finally, a public hearing to amend the Snyderville Code. One item will clarify the meaning of a bed and breakfast in and owner occupied. I'm just guessing this is a reaction to the court ruling that found in favor of the Colby bed and breakfast and against Summit County on the grounds that the county code did not have a good definition of owner occupied.
Yeah, I think that was a really good example of that gap in our code. And so we felt, at least the attorney's office requested, we provide some clarification to that definition so that our, you know, future applicants who might be in this situation or even the decision makers have more clarity with how the code speaks to that, especially regarding the question of who will manage and live in the bed and breakfast, which was confusing this last time around.
Also wanted to ask you, I know that Summit County Manager Tom Fisher lives in Pine Brook. How many other county employees have been displaced as a result of the mandatory evacuation?
Yeah, I don't have exact numbers on that, but I do know quite a few. A good example is we even had two of our librarians who had to go and evacuate, and as such, we had to close down the branch that day because they were short-staffed. So it definitely is impacting the county workforce. We have other elected officials and staff that I know live in both of those communities. So we're definitely being affected by it.
And what can you tell us about the closed-door meeting that council held Monday on security?
So, as you know, we aren't really able to talk about what was discussed in closed session. I can tell you that, you know, there are ongoing conversations about what, if anything, the county can do regarding the start of schools that is coming up this week and how the COVID-19 pandemic might be present in those schools and if there's anything that council can do to try to mitigate that.
Yeah, since the public comment that took place last week at last week's meeting on masks in schools, some people still insisting Summit County has allowed under state law to impose a mask mandate. Health Director Rich Bolo said that he's working with state school authorities to get to a process that would allow to implement limited mask mandates. Can you give us an update on what has happened with those discussions?
Yeah, I'm not really in a position to do that, only to share with the community that we're continuing to work on this issue. We are speaking with the state school board and the state superintendent even tomorrow about what might be possible. And, you know, I get it. I have a son who starts kindergarten this year. I have a daughter going into second grade. I, too, am very interested in what the county can and cannot do on this issue as it pertains to the safety of my own children. I can give, you know, all the confidence to the community that the county is taking this issue very seriously. The health department is looking at data and studying other communities who've gone back to school and understanding how the variant has reacted to that situation. They are coming up with a proposal, and we hope to, I think the community will see some action from the county pretty quickly here.
All right. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Nope, just want to give a big shout out to all the local partners and community staff working on the fire. We've had amazing coordination with our emergency manager, our sheriff's office, our public works department, our communications department, plenty of others, our fire warden that I'm sure I will miss. But we've been very pleased with the coordination with the state and the feds and the incredible response on this. And I'm hearing things are going very well. So we'll see how today goes. Obviously, it's a big concern with this weather that's coming, but we're feeling pretty optimistic.
All right, Deputy Summit County Manager Jana Young, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
The Hideout Town Council forging ahead with efforts to develop property that Summit County officials say was improperly annexed. But the town's legal disputes are slowing its efforts. KPCW's Rick Bruff has more.
On August 12th, the Hideout Town Council approved changes to its annexation development agreement that essentially allow more time for lawsuits to be resolved before any development would get underway. The town's annexation development agreement details a prospective commercial residential center called Silver Meadows on land annexed into Summit County. Under the amended document, deadlines set in the original deal would be shifted to 120 days after the litigation is finally settled. There was little discussion before the vote, but Hideout Council Member Chris Beyer had a few questions. Beyer asked Town Attorney Polly McLean how they decided on a deadline of 120 days.
It was in consultation with the developer, but also just trying to be reasonable in terms of 120 days. We'll find out that the case is done. It gives everyone time to recoup and get their feet on the ground and move forward. So seemed like 120 days was reasonable.
Under the development agreement, the developer for Silver Meadows, Nate Broadbank, has to provide land for several public facilities by the new deadline. Broadbank and the town must also agree on a set of design standards. Beyer asked if they can accomplish that in 4 months. Hideout Mayor Phil Rubin gave his perspective.
At some point, we're going to start to have a sense of how we're going. If we think that things are looking up, we probably would begin some pre-planning. We're still quite a bit of time out from that date. So, you know, I don't know, Chris. I mean, if we need more than 120 days, we can make the change again. But we're at least hopeful that it certainly doesn't make sense to do it before we have a ruling from the court that we feel is final. If we think we need more time, we'll will create more time.
Hideout Mayor Phil Rubin. On October 16th of last year, the Hideout Town Council voted to annex 350 acres into Summit County near Richardson Flats. Summit County filed suit to stop the effort, and on June 22nd, Judge Jennifer Brown ruled that the town did not follow the steps to properly enact the annexation before a legal deadline. Hideout challenged that decision and officially asked Judge Brown to reconsider her ruling. A hearing on that request is coming up in mid-September. For KPCW, I'm Rick Broff.
Good morning. Again, fire crews back on the job this morning on the Parley's Canyon Fire. And the phone with us with an update, Public Information Officer Jesse Bender. Good morning, Jesse.
Good morning. Thanks for having me again this morning.
Yeah. Well, we hope to check in with you as need be here. So we heard yesterday that containment of the fire doubled yesterday. Good news?
That's very good news. Yes, we're up to 21% containment now, and that is mostly along the interstate, which makes a wonderful man-made barrier to the fire growth anyway, and so that's made it really easy to achieve that containment there. And firefighters are continuing to work up both the east and west sides of the fire from that interstate point.
Okay. Yeah, as I drove by yesterday, noticed lots of vehicles that are just parked off to the side. I guess that's kind of the staging area. They're just basically where the fire started. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, they're parking along there and then working both along the interstate and then up the hill from there. So it gives them a good safe spot to park, mm-hmm. And they don't have to walk as far just to get to their starting point.
Yeah. The fire grew by about 2 acres up to now 541 acres. I saw a big column of smoke. Was that just a burn, or is that just kind of smoldering in place?
There's a lot of smoldering still occurring where the fire burned into the conifer trees. So the pine and such, that tends to continue to smolder much longer, even though it wasn't making a big threat to the fire line and to the work that the firefighters were doing. It definitely puts up a visible sign that the fire is still active.
Yeah. So, I mean, do we still have those big flames like we saw, you know, at first?
No, what the firefighters observed yesterday was very minimal flame. It obviously puts up a lot of smoke in comparison. So when I say minimal, it doesn't seem like it might be, but it was drastically reduced over what was seen a couple of days ago.
Sure. And then, I mean, is that a good thing, seeing 2 more acres burn?
It is, yes. We had really favorable weather conditions yesterday, and we're able to make a lot of progress. There are also sections of timber well interior to the fire that may continue to smolder and burn for a while yet, but aren't a threat to containment either. The big concern for today is the red flag warning that's in effect, and we're looking at potential gusts of 40 to 50 miles an hour, according to the meteorological models. And then on the heels of that, which may bring some thunder and lightning as well, on the heels of that, then we're possibly an inch of rain to overnight.
So in terms of those gusty winds, which direction are they going to be blowing? Hopefully down canyon as opposed to kind of up the canyon, huh?
We hope so. However, with a thunderstorm coming in like this, it could be very erratic too. So while the prevailing winds are generally out of the west, and that would push the fire further to the east, if there's enough fire activity and flame to push the fire under those winds, it could easily shift and blow uphill. It could turn around and blow back to the east as well. And so that's really what gives us the most concern, is that we could have very sudden wind shifts.
Yeah, so what's happening there on that eastern border? And again, that's my understanding, is the one that's closest to the homes there in Summit Park.
Yes, your understanding is correct. And that's where we're putting our highest priority efforts. We've got some dozer line that was constructed in there a couple of days ago that's holding really well. We haven't had any progress past it since Sunday. And then continuing from that is hand line dug by the firefighters. And so they picked up where the dozer left off and are moving up through what is pretty steep terrain in a lot of places, and using chainsaws and hand tools to construct fire line right immediately next to the fire perimeter.
All right. So again, the worst case scenario is the winds today. Following that, I guess, again, also concern with potential lightning strikes. And that you just can't control, huh?
No, and unfortunately, not only does that create hazard for our firefighters on this fire, but it may also ignite new fires. And so that'll be a concern for us, as well as for the local units, for Utah Division of Forestry, Fire and State Lands, for the Uintah-Wasatch Cache National Forest, for Utah BLM. So everybody will be on alert for that as well.
All right. And then I guess really what we've got our fingers crossed for is just to get a bunch of rain in here. And that could really be kind of the beginning of the end of this.
It really could. If the winds don't negatively impact the fire, which, you know, that's the first concern, is let's see what the winds bring. And then the second concern is let's see what the rains bring, because they could help tremendously in putting out the fire. On the other hand, there's the risk that it could cause debris flow through that fire area if it's a hard, heavy, fast rain. If it's more of a slow and steady, then it the threat isn't as large. But if we really get hit hard and sudden, it could cause a lot of that freshly burned area to turn into a mudslide.
Mm. So you just need to keep personnel and equipment just kind of out of that lower areas, I guess, huh?
Yes, and even in those upper areas, if depending on the roads that they may have taken or how they've walked into the fire area, those roads could become very slippery and dangerous. It could become an impact to public and residents who are traveling along the interstate. So we all need to be attentive, I think, to today's weather conditions as they impact us all, whether it's directly because of the fire or not.
So the 2 acres in growth of the fire, where was that? Was that closer to the homes?
It was on the southernmost portion of the fire, and that is where it has come over the ridge into Lamb's Canyon a little bit. Firefighters are working across that ridge, some from the west side of it, some from the east side, working towards each other. And so we're optimistic that they're going to make really good progress in there this morning. But that is where the biggest concern would be for open flame and the potential winds.
Yeah. And then back to that, just that problem with perhaps the rain and the debris flow path. Any structures in the way, or are we just concerned about the mud flowing over the highway, or?
Mostly over the highway, yes. That's the good news, is that there aren't structures, residents, homeowners below the fire so much as to the sides of it. So they shouldn't be too negatively impacted depending on what this rain brings, but the travelers will be the bigger concern.
Okay, and the deal with I-80 is that you do have one lane closed, and it really narrows where there were 4 lanes, so one of the climbing lanes has been utilized then for the fire operations, which has left mostly 3 lanes open there headed uphill. You know, full containment, I read on the website, isn't expected until September 1st, and I guess that surprised me. Does it really take that long to get 100% containment?
One of the things we always try to do is make realistic expectations. It's entirely possible that it could be contained much sooner than September 1st, but it is more comfortable to put the date out further, not knowing what this weather system might bring. We wouldn't want to suggest that we think we can do it in 2 days if the reality is that the weather coming in may drastically change that. Yep. So creating a realistic expectation of how much we can control and how much Mother Nature dictates upon us.
Okay, so we should really know quite a bit more when we talk sometime tomorrow, huh?
Yes, today is going to tell a lot, and tomorrow we should have a better idea of what the outlook for containment really is going to be.
Okay, we'll keep that 8:30 time for me, and we'll check back tomorrow.
You got it. Thank you so very much.
Thanks, Jesse. Jesse Bender, again, the Public Information Officer with the Parley's Fire. Well, Summit County Community Development Direct, department has been busy this past month, receiving 20 new building applications. Development Director Pat Putt told KPCW that those run the gamut from art to childcare. KPCW's Rick Bruff has more.
During his regular visit to KPCW, Pat Putt said that one of the applications is from Summit County itself. A conditional use permit, or CUP, is being requested for the Public Works facility near Wanship to expand the garage and maintenance area. The department also received an application for a guest ranch in Browns Canyon. Putt explained what's being requested for the 50-acre parcel.
I think the best way to describe it is an event facility. There would be a barn-style building that would accommodate events, weddings, functions, small conferences. They would have the associated lodging part of that with food and food service. My understanding is there'll also be some outdoor activity amenities associated with that.
In addition, he said that Mountainlands Community Housing Trust has another project set for Silver Creek Village. Meanwhile, an in-home daycare called Heaven's Little Angels is proposed for Lower Silver Creek. That application requires just a low-impact permit, which would be approved by Putt. And Ballet West, which has a dance academy located north of I-80 near Kimball Junction, wants to move further west down Rasmussen Road to the Summit Center. For KPCW, I'm Rick Bruff.
Well, containment of the Parley's Canyon fire doubled overnight. It's now 21% contained. 2 new acres of land burning, standing at 541 acres. A total of 216 personnel are assigned to the fire. Again, as we just heard, a red flag warning for today is forecast for gusty winds approaching with this cold front. Yesterday's favorable weather allowed firefighters to accomplish a lot of work. The Summit County Sheriff's Office extended the fire evacuation orders. Officials tell us that that order is due to a red flag weather warning. The evacuation order continuation is as follows. Upper Pine Brook will remain evacuated through Wednesday at 8 p.m. Fire officials will continue to evaluate and adjust the timing according to weather and fire behavior. Summit Park and Timberline will remain evacuated through Thursday, 8 p.m. And Lower Pine Brook residents may return to their homes. These are the residents between Kilby Road and Pine Brook Boulevard. Summit County Sheriff Office Public Information Officer Andrew Wright said they made the decision based on the latest information from firefighters.
We showed them a map and said, in our opinion, based off of the fire activity that you're explaining to us and the impact that we have on the community, we feel as a sheriff's office that it makes sense for this area to be, you know, for the order to be lifted, and they were okay with that. Now, we've had some other questions. Well, we're just across the street from that area. Why can't we go in? Again, we have to draw the line somewhere. If we keep inching that, we might as well lift the entire order. And again, we're following the recommendation of our fire experts.
He added that the evacuation order could change again depending on the weather and resulting fire behavior. As a result of that evacuation order being extended, Park City schools will now start Monday, August 23rd, instead of this Thursday, again, with students from Upper Pine Brook, Summit Park, and Timberline not able to return home. School buses weren't able to pick up those students in their regular locations. The last day of school will remain the same as June 3rd. One scheduled vacation day, March 11th, will now be an in-person learning day. The American Red Cross shelter at Park City High School has transitioned to an information center. It's open 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. through Wednesday. Volunteers will be available to answer your questions and to provide comfort and care to any evacuee. If you need support outside those operating hours, please call 1-800-RED-CROSS. The Park City Ice Arena and sports fields are serving as the command post and temporary home to hundreds of firefighters and coordinators. They came from all over the West to battle the Parley's Canyon fire. KPCW's Ben Lassiter visited the headquarters, and he has this report on the firefighters' experience.
Great Basin Team Number 4, a federal incident management team, brought about 50 people to the ice arena from all over Utah, Idaho, Nevada, and Wyoming. They're coordinating the fight against the blaze all day and sleeping in tents on the field at night. Also staying in tents there are about 150 firefighters from federal, state, and local agencies around the country. Nick Howell, a spokesperson for Team Number 4 who came up from Cedar City, says it's an ideal all-in-one site for sending out information and setting up camp.
I oftentimes refer to fire camp as like a mini city, right? So you've got all of these tents on the grass. Those are, you know, those are where the team members are camping. And then you've got this area over here where, you know, when the crews pull off the line around, you know, 10 o'clock at night, they come back here. We feed them and then they can, you know, set up their tents or their sleeping bags on the grass as well.
The days begin at 6 a.m. with general briefings. Then firefighters grab breakfast and lunch delivered by a national catering service before heading to the edge of the fire. At the scene, they're briefed with more specific information in groups. From there, most crews hike through rocky slopes and tangled bushes and trees, carrying heavy packs and tools for clearing vegetation. Their job is to clear all vegetation from a 20-foot wide line all the way around the fire. A team with chainsaws leads and cuts through while another team hauls away the brush. Meanwhile, at the ice arena, Team Number 4 monitors and coordinates the ground and air crews. They follow digital map systems to tell firefighters what's around them and where to go. The incident team also has a medical unit for minor injuries and communication with media and the public. The crews return to base camp around 8:30 to eat. After dinner, they have to sharpen hand tools, set up camp, and fully prepare to head back out the next day. Around 10 o'clock, 16 hours after the day begins, is when the firefighters and Team Number 4 staff head to their tents. Howell says it's not an easy job for anyone involved.
It's definitely a challenge. It's pretty tiring. Really low sleep hours during that two-week assignment. So when you get home, the next day is just full on like recovery mode. You crash when you get home.
Incident management team members sign up to work 1 year at a time. Some on Team Number 4 have worked 15 straight years. Team members tend to have 10 to 35 years of fire management experience of all kinds. They work day jobs back home. Some are with federal and state agencies, and many lead their local fire departments. They can be called on short notice to fires, search and rescues, and other emergencies. They work up to 14 days straight, except for unusual circumstances that can require another 7 days. When Team Number 4 took over management of the Parley's Canyon Fire Monday morning, it was 10% contained and 539 acres in size. By Monday evening, containment was up to 21%. Howell credited the local agencies for a great response in the first 2 days, saying it put his team in a good position. But everyone involved still has an enormous task on their hands to keep the fire from growing and eventually putting it out.
So this fire has a very high sense of urgency. Obviously, there's a lot of people affected. There's a lot of homes being threatened. There's a lot of communities at risk. A lot of values at risk. But on the other side of the coin, the interagency cooperation has been amazing. I mean, you know, the counties have really been involved. You know, the state had a really solid game plan when we got here. We're basically just executing the plan that they started. We're finishing what they started. Everybody seems to be really happy with the way things are going, and hopefully we can keep it that way.
For the latest developments on the Parley's Canyon Fire, visit kpcw.org. Ben Lassiter, KPCW News.
Joining me now in the studio from Recycle Utah, Executive Director Carolyn Warr. Good morning. Get the right microphone up here. Yeah. Let's see. You hosted the 100-mile meal last weekend?
Yeah, we had that on Saturday. Kind of just as everything was starting with the fire, we were getting ready to start our event. So it made it kind of a little bit of a funky event, but we still were able to pull it off. The way this event works is we work to secure local food from local farmers. And, you know, when the food's ready, the food's ready. So we kind of did have to go on with that event. And it wasn't Oakley. And at that time, we were a little bit outside of the smoke from the fire. So we were really grateful to be able to host it and raise some money for Recycle Utah. Again, thanks to our sponsors, Epic Promise and the team from Park City Mountain Resort and Gallery Mar for making this possible. So we're happy to get it in before we get into what we're dealing with right now.
Yeah. And again, able to raise the money that you were
right,
hoping
yes.
for.
Right, yes. We were successful. We had a few people that were evacuating and were not able to make it. And we're just checking in with them this week to make sure they're doing okay. So
okay. Let's see. You've got a composting workshop happening this weekend?
Yeah, we have two events coming up on Saturday. A composting workshop from 10 to 11 a.m. at the center. This is mainly learning how to compost at home. And don't let it scare you. I'm able to compost. I have a compost at home. It's fairly easy. It doesn't have to be overly complicated. Really just putting the right things in there and keeping the right things out. It's from 10 to 11, and we will be hosting this hopefully outside. And if the weather's bad, we'll go inside and wear masks. So come prepared for either. If you want to go, you can call us at the center at 435-649-9698 or email Mary at recycleutah.org.
Okay. And again, what you get, if you have a yard, it's great dirt.
Yeah, totally. It's great dirt. It makes, honestly, I think you take out your trash a lot less. You know, usually people take out their trash in their kitchen because it smells bad. And if you have a compost bin, your trash really doesn't get full and doesn't smell bad very often at all. So really it kind of changes your whole system in your kitchen. And obviously, it doesn't get as smelly. So.
Yeah. And as you kind of look forward to, you know, a new headquarters, if that happens, are we talking about having some kind of composting or some kind of green pickup? Or
yeah, this is totally on the top of our list for things at the new center. I really like to explore collecting this type of waste from people. You know, you bring your glass in, you bring your food waste in. I'd really like to be able to do something like that. And, you know, yard waste is a whole other thing than food waste. But, you know, let's kind of looking at food waste first, and I think yard waste would probably be secondary.
Okay. And then you also have the second event then Saturday?
Yeah, we have a paper shredding event in partnership with First Community Bank. And I think they were scheduled to be in your pledge drive this week, so you might get to talk to them next week. This is formerly Mountain West Bank, kind of located over by the Holiday Village Theater. That's from 10 until noon, and they're doing a shredding event. So if you have some files you've been meaning to go through, you can bring it to them, and you literally put it in a bucket and watch the bucket go up into the truck and shreds it right in front of you. So no need to be worried about them actually shredding your stuff. You'll see it happen right in front of your eyes. And then everything they collect is recycled, so that's a good reason we're partnering with them. And if you are going to come, get a little bit prepared ahead of time. Staples and paper clips are okay, but none of those big black clips, no three-ring binders, no laminated paper. So
none of those plastic sheets, right?
Yep. Yeah. So come on by 10 to noon on Saturday at First Community Bank.
Okay. And you've got Green Drink happening next month.
Right. September 14th, we're doing Green Drinks at the Summit County Landfill at 3 Mile Canyon. Tim Loveday is going to take us on a tour there. And if you've never been to landfill, I always encourage everybody to go. You know, you bring your curbside bin to the curb and you don't really know where it goes. This is exactly where it goes. You know, it's not a pretty sight. You know, no landfill really is. But our team in Summit County does a really good job managing this landfill and following proper protocols there. You know, which is especially important with it being so close to Rockport. You'll see how close our landfill is to Rockport. It is a lined facility, but still need to be careful. There's still wildlife there, and it's still, you know, natural environment. So if you've never been to landfill, great opportunity to go. September 14th. We'll get to landfill about 6:30, and we'll kind of carpool from the center as people feel comfortable given COVID. So,
okay. Any special gear, boots or anything you need to wear?
You definitely should wear closed-toed shoes, dress for the weather. We will be kind of walking close to the landfill, but obviously not in it. So wear comfortable shoes. We'll be doing some walking in, just something that'll keep you safe. It doesn't smell very great there, so maybe wear a mask if you feel more comfortable doing that.
Okay, and you do need to RSVP?
Yeah, we probably prefer that. Then we kind of know who to expect and who's going to meet us there, who's looking for a carpool buddy, if you're comfortable with that. So you can email us at outreach@recycleu.org if you'd like to attend, or just show up at the landfill that day. More details to come on that.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
We have Harvest Festival coming up September 25th. This is kind of like a version of the farmer's market out in Eastern Summit County. We're hosting down in Oakley. So if any vendors out there, you know, you maybe make arts and crafts kind of thing, or you have a food vendor, you can check it out on our website and get signed up in advance.
Okay, and we've got another hazardous household waste start collecting?
Yep, September 25th, we'll be at the canyons that day collecting hazmat with the Sunrise Rotary Club.
Okay, and a dumpster days, think about that as well.
Yeah, we got a lot going on in September, not a whole lot more this month, but a lot going on in September, so check out our website, recycleutah.org for more info. And everybody stay safe with the fires. I know it's a tricky time in our community, but I love seeing where we bond together. You know, I have two evacuees staying at my house, and I think this is the right time to step up and help out our friends and neighbors. So good luck, Park City.
Okay, Carolyn, thanks. Carolyn Moore is the Executive Director of Recycle Utah.